answering your tough financial questions for the past 26 years. It's Allworth's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it's about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hansen and Pat McClain would like to help you by answering your call. To join Allworth's Money Matters, call now at 833-99-WORTH. That's 833-99-W-O-R-T-H.
Welcome to Allworth's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about financial matters. This program exists to help people like yourself make wise choices with their finances. And both myself and my co-host here, Pat, both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself during the week, come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with now, doing things on your own, or whatever the case may be, we hope you consider us your financial advisor.
Yep.
As well.
Give us a call and we'll see what
we
can
help. I actually ran into somebody, Pat, the other day. Huge, he's like, some people become, I shouldn't say, anyway, huge fans of the of our radio program, our podcast. This guy was a huge fan, and he goes back and listens to our podcast at other periods of time, and he's telling me all about this, and he says, I just need to be real upfront with you, though. He says, I'll probably never be your client, at least not until I'm older, because I really enjoy this stuff. I do it all myself. And he says, at some point, my wife doesn't like doing it at all, so at some point in time, I'll probably engage with your firm.
But not then, unusual.
But then he said, but I've sent a lot of people your way. And I was talking to him more about that, and he's because people, his friends know that he's good at what
and
he does.
And he likes it.
But he doesn't want to do it for anyone.
Yeah, you don't,
you don't want that responsibility.
You don't
right?
want that responsibility to give your friends financial advice.
So anyway, feel free to forward this podcast on to some of your friends that think that you think could benefit from this if you think it's of any value whatsoever. Anyway,
if you think we can help them, just have them call our firm.
Yeah, there's that too.
We do that.
If you want to join us and join the program and have your question answered on the air, our contact number here is 1-833-99-WORTH. Toll free 833-99-WORTH. Numerically, it's 833-999-6784. And love to take your call on anything financially related. And we're going to start off here in Sacramento with Gary. Gary, you're with Allworth Money Matters.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, so I've been impacted by job actions at work. I'm 52, have a 401k. So I understand I can pull my money out and move it into an IRA. And so I've been managing my own money for the last 30 years, doing the proper adjustments between large cap, small cap, et cetera. I'm 100% equities, following your show and guidelines and whatnot. But I'm approaching that point in my life where, well, not only did the job riskiness kind of jump up in the last couple of weeks, but I'm wondering if at 52, is it time now to look at moving the risk bar down a bit? But larger than that, is it too soon to engage a firm like yourself that will offer me some management aspects that I just don't have the skill set to do? Investing in REITs and bonds and all this type of stuff that gets me out of the 401k and into an IRA with a lot more options.
So the first question is, yes, you should probably take a look at your allocations. And you may be fine at 100% equities. But you may want to bring it down a little.
Yeah, tell us about – so this is not uncommon. You're 52. So let's go back a month ago before things started happening at work. When were you planning on retiring?
I'm shooting for 62 to 65. So I got about 10 years-ish left.
And are you at a point now that you're concerned that maybe your job's not going to be around a year from now and you might have to go find something different and you don't know what that's like because you haven't been in the job market for a long time or –
Well, I'm in the midst of that right now. The exit date is approaching, so I'm in the job hunt market.
Yeah, and what's the outlook for you?
Well, I hope it's good. It's only been 6 weeks in. My wife says I need to be more patient and whatnot, which God didn't bless me with.
Okay, well, good for you.
I tell you, I'm not telling this to scare you. I'm just giving. I have a good friend of mine. He's mid-50s. He's got a master's degree from Pepperdine. Was with the same company 21 years. One day they did a reorg. He's out, right? It took him 11 months to get a job.
Well, to get the job he wanted.
Yeah, and that may be the case. I've been in this place 28 years, so it's a similar footprint.
So you've been there for 28 years.
Yeah.
Well, to get a career job to continue forward, yes.
It's without relocating is oftentimes the difficult part, depending upon how far up you are in the pyramid of the company.
Yeah, and I think what happens, Gary, and what you probably experience, as you get further in your career, you become really great at a couple things, right? And a specialist in a few different areas, and sometimes and you've got a certain income level that you need to replace. But I the only reason I'm saying this is because you said your wife said give it some time, and these things can take time, and don't lose hope. And I think it's particularly hard as we get a little older in life. We've had some of the major milestones that life had, happens, and then it's like, are we still needed here in the marketplace? Are we still of value? Right? And all those emotions start kind of going through our head, and then we start second questioning, and maybe I need to start taking money from my retirement account now at 52, so maybe I'm overly aggressive, and it all kind of happens at the same time.
But
exactly. And I'm wondering, is the do I just continue on with my investment mindset?
So tell us about your situation.
Is now the right time?
Do you have any kids that you're still supporting?
A boy in high school, and I have another son that's in college, and he's paying his own way. So I just got a youngster that'll be going to college in a couple of years.
And does your wife have a job outside the home?
Yes, she does.
And what do you owe on your house?
About $250.
What's the value of the home?
Probably a little over $5 million.
Do you have much in the way of other debts?
No.
What?
No debt at all.
Good for you. What do you have in your 401k, IRAs?
I'm sitting on mine about just shy of 1.2. My wife's got about 250, and we have some cash holdings and stock and savings.
You guys are great savers.
How much do you have in cash and stock?
About 120 in cash and about 100 in stock.
So the answer to the question is
what's your annual income?
Approximately.
Personally, just you.
Just me, about 150.
Okay.
So you guys are great savers. Great savers. I don't know if you need me to tell you that, but you've done a good job. The allocation may or may not be too risky.
What were you going into the financial crisis? I know you're younger then, but...
Yeah, I was younger, but we rode it through. I rode that thing through, and it has been a great run. But getting closer to that 62 age, there become some realities where you have to be strategic in your thoughts and not as bold as you were when you were 35.
I can't speak for Scott, but the question I'm asking myself, is this a reaction to what happened in your job life, which isn't unusual?
And frankly, there are times when there's events in life that causes us to have a kind of a different risk profile than what at other times we're saying, I have so many uncertainties in my life now that I want a little more certainty with my investments.
And if you came into our office, we would actually bring you through a risk analysis, a program that would help us understand what that is today, right? It may not be the same. Your risk could be different 2 years from now as it was 2 years ago.
But even if you're looking, so let's say you plan on full retirement 10 years out, you're not going to spend your entire 401k at 62. You're just going to take some income on it.
But Scott, he's such a great saver, and he's going to continue to save for another 10 years. To move this portfolio to 80 or 85 or 90% stocks is not a big deal, down from 100% in equities. So the answer to the question
I would agree.
If you trim some of the equity exposure off by 10 or 15%, I don't think that you would be hurting yourself over the long term. And we are pretty deep into a bull market.
Do you think there's any value in funds that I don't readily have access to, like REITs and all that, that I would move this into?
Oh, absolutely.
A realm where you manage for me and give me a far more broad, diverse diversification of.
Absolutely. One of the reasons that people actually use IRAs versus the 401k is because of that. If you were over age 55, our answer might be a little bit different. Between the ages of 55 and 59 and a half, maybe a little bit different. So if you came in to visit with our firm, or I would say any good financial planning firm,
independent fiduciary firm,
they're going to, the good ones will want to do a financial plan on you. And the questions you would ask is, you know, can I retire in 10 years? And what will it look like?
That, and I also think, what is your income need right now? Because you've been at 150, and
maybe you could live at 100 and still get to your objective.
We can live on my wife's salary. It'll be tight, but we can.
No. What I'm meaning is, and maybe you'll find the job, the perfect job you just absolutely love, and it pays you 150 a year. Maybe, but when I'm just thinking, what if there's some job that you absolutely love, like this would be a great job, but it only pays me 110. I've been making 150. I don't want to take that big of a step back. This is where some financial planning might be helpful for you, because we've seen a lot of times, Gary, and I don't, you may have loved your job you're in, you're not, but we've seen a lot of people, they've kind of in this grind, they're like, I'm going to retire in 7 years, counting down the years. I'm like, why? Well, I don't like what I'm doing or what, and through some planning and whatnot, they went and found other careers, sometimes not at the same pay level, but it's so much, they enjoy it so much more. They're saying, I'm fine working another year or two. What I'm questioning is, you might already have enough in retirement savings now that if you project out another 10 years from now without much in additional savings, you might still be fine.
What's your retirement look like? So that's what you're going to get out of a good financial advisor, as well as the asset management of how those dollars are being allocated and how quickly they're being watched, or closely they're being watched. So I
have one question on the fee structure.
Mm-hmm.
The fees that you charge, you know, whether it's 0.9 or 1.1% or whatever, is that inclusive of the fees that are charged normally within, when you look at the fee costs within a particular fund?
No.
Or is that on top of?
It's on top of. Okay. So, but the fees, you know,
a good advisor is going to use very low cost funds.
Yeah, the fees are going to be pretty low cost.
Basis points.
And if you look at pricing, in terms of pricing, I can only speak for ourselves. We're about middle of the road. In terms of pricing, we're not either on the high side, we're not on the low side, but, you know.
But talk to a couple of advisors. I think it would be.
Spend the time.
Particularly now that you've got some, once your job's over and you've got some time.
Yeah, and there's no hurry to roll that 401k into an IRA either.
So, okay.
None at
all.
All right,
very good.
All right, appreciate the call.
Yeah, good luck to Gary. And Matt, we've got a, I don't know if it's a guy, some sort of tutorial on our website.
It's the emergency.
Jasmine, what is it?
What's
our producer's
it called?
In the studio here. She doesn't remember either. But because we have a emergency guide to retirement,
and it
on
is,
our website.
It's a little booklet, pamphlet. If you were, if it was 1970, it'd be a pamphlet.
We're not quite sure what it is, but it's
it's the emergency. It's a guide.
Yeah,
it's a right
to kind of help through it,
right in its own name.
And Pat, you made mention of age 55. There's a provision in the tax code that says if you separate service the year you reach an age 55, you can draw money from that retirement plan. You don't have to be age 59 and a half. So sometimes we see people, and this is not that uncommon. I had a conversation with someone within the last week, planning on working a few more years, suddenly get this job reorg, and wow, you know, suddenly I'm 57 and I was planning on working until I'm 63, and now I don't know what the heck's going to go on. It might make sense to leave some money in that 401k.
Because it's liquid. But if you roll it into an IRA,
it's locked up.
After age.
Technically, you can get at it if you start the series of payment that you can't change for 5 years.
But prior to age 59 and a half, it's locked up. So between the ages of 55 and 59 and a half, if you have money in an employer plan, with the exception of a deferred compensation plan, it may make sense, a 457, it may make sense for you to keep some, if not all of the money in that plan.
Yes.
And if you have an advisor that doesn't actually explain that to you, or if you had ample cash on the outside, then you may decide to.
So, I mean, one of the things we talk about often is getting yourself in a position so that work is an option and not an obligation. I think, look, when you're starting to approach retirement, and a lot of times people don't deal with the stuff because I can always deal with it tomorrow. But if you're within, say, 3 to 5 years of retirement, I'd say meet with a financial advisor to go through this process. You never know what's going to happen with your job or your health. All we know is studies show about 50% of us go into retirement earlier than we had planned.
Yeah, employer changes, health, your health, the health of a spouse or parent.
Yeah.
Or a child, even.
Yeah, it's quite common. So, all right, we're going to continue with some calls. 1-833-99-WORTH is the number to join Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Allworth's Money Matters. It's 1-833-99-WORTH. We are in Rockland, California with Scott. Scott, you're with Allworth's Money Matters.
Hello, how you doing?
Great.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I love your show. I've been listening forever and appreciate you getting me in. Wish you guys were still doing 2 hours, but I understand for personal reasons, it's probably nicer doing one.
We haven't done 2 hour radio program in several years.
Years.
We had what? We had a year where we did 3 hours, and
which is like an hour past.
I don't know how guys or gals do a radio show every. Some do it every day for 3 hours. I don't know how they do it. But.
Yeah. So that's like 2 hours past my attention span. But what can we do for you?
Well, I enjoy you guys. I listen to you on podcasts when I don't get you on Saturdays. And,
review and us, please.
I will. I'll make sure I get
Thank
on
you.
And do the 5-star review. What'd you say the other week? You had 3 or 4 reviews total. I'll bump you up by 20% maybe.
Yeah. We're actually not allowed because of our industry. We cannot ask for positive reviews.
We can't. Yeah. But, we can't say like us on Facebook. Yeah. We could say connect with or something. We can't say like us.
But
isn't that funny?
But so if you go on there and do a review, if you gave us a good one, that'd be good.
I gotcha.
Or give us a bad review. Just give us an honest review.
You don't want a bad review, Scott. Why would you say that?
He just said he loved us. He's not going to give us a bad review.
But he's more than him or listening to this show.
Oh, please don't give us a bad review.
Thank you. All right, what can we do for you, Scott?
Please, actually. No.
Actually, here, let me say it. Anybody listening, please don't give them a bad review. They're awesome.
Thank you.
There.
Thank you. Now that we got the marketing out of the way, what can we do for you?
So I'm, as some of your other callers have said in the past, the sandwich generation. I have older parents and having issues. I've got kids. I'm 2 years away from having 2 kids in college. My sister has 2 kids in college, and my parents, who used to have a comfortable upper middle class life, are now living on Social Security alone.
Wow.
They're living on about $3,300 a month. Luckily, they own their home, but they live in a home that has property taxes, obviously, and also has HOAs involved. So their cost of living there is about $800 a month. The value of the home's probably $325, $330.
How old are they?
Yeah, he's turning 78 or 77 this year. 78 this year. And my mom's going to be 76 this year. They've lost most of their assets in 07 and due to some other issues. And so the thing they have left is life insurance. And my mom's been servicing their life insurance policy. Unfortunately, she was allowing my dad, who had dementia, take care of them. And one of them ended up lapsing lack of payment because he forgot to pay it. And his health has turned.
Did they send usually there's some sort of reinstatement period on these.
Yeah, and
it was beyond that. We tried.
Okay.
And there was no cash value in it whatsoever.
Don't know. It's identical to the policy I'm calling about now.
Okay.
They had 2 of them.
All right.
So, and it was just like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, this happened. We went back and forth with them. They wanted medical records and all this stuff that would have been just insurmountable to try and get on my father.
Got it.
California doesn't provide for a reinstatement due to medical.
What's the question on the existing life insurance policy?
Okay, so he's had this policy since April of 85. It is a, they call it a, what kind of policy? I'm sorry, I just had it. It's by Voya Companies.
Universal Life or Whole Life? Probably Universal Life.
It's called, they've got a, I just had it, sorry.
How much is the death benefit on it?
It's $100,000. It's a Designer Life Plus is what they're calling
and
it.
And is there, designer, I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any cash value in it?
There's a loan for $14,400, so the payoff is $85,000. They sent her a letter apparently in 2016 saying that the cost of insurance was going up and that she needed to pay more, and she didn't. She continued to pay the amount she was used to paying.
Yep.
there is currently an accumulated value in it of about 15,000. Let me get to that page. Beginning accumulated value and 14,963 is the ending accumulated value, but then there's also the loan for 14,480.
Let me just get some clarity. And a net, let me get some clarity
net
here.
Cash.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Is your major question here today is how are we going to help our parents?
They've sent her a bill for the arrearages on the payments of about almost $1,400.
You don't really have to pay on that.
And the interest is of $676. So we've got to come up with a little over two grand to keep it current.
And, so you've got a I'm thinking you've got a couple options in front of you. All right, here's with this life insurance. You could do a couple different things. One is you can keep this thing going until the day your father passes away. Okay, it'll be $100,000 there. And then it's like, let's figure out how we're going to do this. Two, you can sell this policy. Someone would buy it from you.
You'd get some cash for this. And what happens is the person that buys the policy then becomes the beneficiary and the owner of the policy, and they're responsible for paying off the loan and making the premium payments to keep it in force. They get the return when your father passes away. But
this is the viaticals I've heard you talk about in the past.
Yeah. Well, we say don't invest in these life settlement companies or viatical companies. That doesn't mean there isn't
a market to
and
sell
into. Yeah, and if you've got a good policy to find someone to buy it from you. But
tell us about yourself. Can you afford to make the premium payments on this?
So my sister and I have gone through her bills, and we've actually lowered some bills that she's paying and made it possible for her to be able to make up the difference.
When you say her, you mean your sister or your mother?
My mother. She's got enough. She's got enough to make
it.
Is
your dad ill?
He's got dementia.
He's got dementia, and he's barely ambulatory.
Okay.
And
so don't sell the policy.
Don't sell the policy.
Do everything you can to keep the policy in force.
Do not let this thing lapse.
Yes.
And you can ask the company to do an in-force ledger?
I call it midstream, but there's a different name for it.
They did just recalculate it out, and they said that $515 a month will make it current and cover everything, I guess, or something like that. I haven't seen that document yet.
But you might be able to pay less and still keep the policy alive. You might want to just figure out what's the absolute bare minimum that we can pay to keep this policy in force.
Yeah.
Well, at the very least, I think we're going to have to pay the $2,000 is what I'm getting.
Okay. So that they can walk you through that. The point being is even if you had to lower your contributions to your company 401k or your sister did, do not let this thing lapse.
No.
Right? Okay. Don't let this thing lapse at all.
Okay. We've been looking at this all along as my mom's retirement because my dad's been in poor health for a long time. And this was always kind of like when he leaves, this is how he's going to take care of her. And they already lost the one that was identical to this.
And have you considered a reverse mortgage on this home?
Thank you, Scott. That's where I was going to go with it next.
It's been mentioned. It's been discussed. We're trying to hold off on doing any of that because there's no long-term care. There's no other, there's no other assets in place, and so we're trying to hold on to the one remaining asset she has and preserve it as long as possible because we don't know what's going to happen with him. We don't know if he's going to have an issue.
If you and your sister can help out with some of the cash flow needs over the next year or two, I would probably do that. If it would be a financial burden for you or your sister I might do a reverse mortgage now.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're giving up. Just think of it like a loan on the house. Think of it like a home equity loan. And you get structured so you have a line of credit to draw against, so you don't have to pull it all out. And that you just don't, instead of making the interest payments, the interest just accrues on itself. So over time, the loan gets larger, but presumably the value of the home will get larger over time. So whatever equity is there, it's still your mom's equity. And she eventually passed away. If there's still equity there, it goes to the kids. So it can really...
And there's just you and your sister, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And our spouses, which we have to, negotiate with.
Oh,
as well.
Them.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, those people. I understand.
Yeah.
Listen, I understand. I come from a family of five children, and we took care of my...
Between siblings and then spouses of trying to just figure out who's going to...
Who's gonna,
it is not easy.
Yeah.
So a reverse mortgage...
Fixes that.
It would fix that.
Well, as a student of the Hanson McLean School of Finance, I generally accept that as a reasonable last-ditch kind of...
Thank you. Good enough.
My sister and my spouse may be on different pages with that, so I'll have to work that.
Well, that's why.
Yep.
So. Yeah. And it's by the way, Scott, it's Allworth is now the new brand for Hanson McLean.
But anyway, good luck to you. Thanks for the call, Scott.
Do everything you can to keep that policy in force, 100%, and talk to the insurance company and figure out what is the minimum that we can pay. If it's going to go up year by year, you're fine with that. You don't need to have a level to the time he's scheduled to pass on mortality-wise. What's the very minimum to keep the thing in force for the next year? All right? We're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Allworth's Money Matters.
Can't get enough of Allworth's Money Matters? Visit allworthfinancial.com/radio to listen to the Money Matters podcast. Do you have a financial question that needs answering? Call us at 833-99-WORTH. That's 833-99-WORTH.
Welcome back to Allworth's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for staying with us.
Yes. All that huge long break at the bottom of the hour. It's a couple of minutes or whatnot.
Yeah.
If you want to be part of our program, our contact number, 1-833-99-WORTH. That'll put you on with Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Allworth's Money Matters.
And you ask questions, and we do our best to answer them.
That's how that works. We'll do our best.
That's all we can do. That's all you can ask
for. Our best.
Now,
you can ask for the right answer. That's what you should ask for.
Okay.
I hate to say it.
We will do our best to give you the right answer.
Okay. And hopefully you'll have some sort of confidence in it.
Okay.
Whether we're right or wrong.
We're right.
Because it's just our best. Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio, talk with Julie. Julie, you're with Allworth's Money Matters.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're wonderful. How are you, Julie?
Good. Thanks for taking the call.
You sound happy. I like happy people.
I'm doing okay.
All right.
What can we do for you, Julie?
Okay, so I'm retired. My husband and I are both retired, and I just my dad passed away, and I just received inheritance from his passing, and it's $1.2 million.
Okay.
And so I mean, I know what I'm going to do with part of it, but there's a cash portion that I don't quite know what to do with yet.
What are you going to do with the part of it that you know you're going to do something with?
Half of it is already invested in stocks. So mm-hmm. It's a brokerage account of about $566,000. So I'm thinking of just leaving that intact because it's already set up for income producing.
Uh-huh.
And then there's going to be about $525,000 in cash.
Already.
First of all, sorry about your father.
Oh, thanks.
Has anyone discussed community property versus separate property with you yet about how this is your money and not the money of the marriage? So have you had this discussion at all?
Talk to me about that.
So if you inherit money or are gifted money, it is your property, not the property of the marriage, which means...
Whether you've been married 2 years or...
130 years, or whether you're Larry King and been married dozens of times, it's your property. That means that if you commingle these with assets with that of your spouse, it may become community property of which that spouse will have claim to. So what this means is in most situations, and especially with a dollar amount this large, our recommendation would be to keep it separate property.
No, I wouldn't say that's our recommendation. That's something to consider before you choose to make it community property. Let me ask you a question, Pat.
Okay.
If you inherited money today,
uh-huh. Would I keep it separate property?
Yes, you've been married how many years?
33.
And how would that go?
Well, I'm a great guy to be married to, number one. So I don't think this would be a driver.
In any case, it's just something to consider. And the reason we bring that up is because
we've seen people have commingled inherited assets with that of the spouse and then gotten a divorce after and then having to separate. So just keep that in mind. Just keep that in mind.
Okay.
So
if there were no emotions involved, you would keep it separate.
Do you still owe on your home?
We owe about $100,000 on our house.
Have you thought about paying that off?
I did think about it, but if I did that, I'm afraid that might cause tax problems because I wouldn't be able to use Schedule A and deduct some of the other donations and things that we do every year.
You're not filing the standard deduction right now?
For 2018, did you file standard or you're still itemized?
Yeah, itemized, yeah.
Okay.
How much itemized were you above that of the standard deduction?
About 12,000.
Okay. I would still consider, so you're probably, your interest rate's probably around 4% on your mortgage, I'm guessing?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Okay. So you're getting a tax deduction. You're able to deduct from your income $4,000. Doesn't mean you save $4,000 on taxes. You're able to deduct. The argument would be if the interest deduction is so valuable, you would actually refinance to a higher interest. Because think of the deduction. So
our recommendation would be to commingle $100,000 of this and pay off the house. How long have you been married?
36 years.
Okay,
I would. If it were me,
I'd pay the house.
I'd
pay the house off. Right.
Otherwise, you have to go and invest and earn more than 4%
with risk.
Yeah.
It has to have some risk because bank CDs aren't going to pay. They'll pay 2.5. If you want more than 2.5, you got to have some risk.
The second thing I would look at is I would not continue to hold those stocks. That $566,000 in, you said, individual stocks.
I would agree with that.
And the reason is, if I gave you $566,000 today, would you go out and buy that exact basket of stocks today?
No, because these stocks were, well, my dad had stock options, so he got these stocks like 30 years ago.
But the question is, would you go buy the exact same thing? So there's no tax implications in you selling these stocks.
He had tax implications. You do not.
Correct.
Right?
That's right.
You receive what's called a full step up in basis. These dollars received a full step up in basis, which there's no tax implications. The IRS acts like you just bought them the day he died. So,
right. In
saying that, I would start with a clean slate and build a portfolio that was appropriate for you.
Uh huh.
And I wouldn't be married to these individual stocks at all. So, the mere fact that you told me that he receive them as stock options tells me that he's probably overweighted in, I don't know, your Cincinnati. Is it Procter & Gamble shares?
There is some of that, but there's a lot of Honeywell.
Okay. So you wouldn't, I don't know if you would go out and take all those dollars and buy the Honeywell shares today if I had just given you $560,000 in cash.
And I think the easiest thing to do is to do nothing.
But that's not
maybe
the
not
right,
the right
thing. That's not the right thing to do.
What's your investment experience been like over the last 10 or 15 years? Do you have much in a 401k or IRA that you've watched fluctuate in value? And
well, I have an IRA. Part of the money that I got was an IRA, and then we also have an IRA and a 457 because we have our income is from pensions.
So one of the challenges, and you guys both work for companies that have pensions, that's your primary income for retirement. One of the real challenges, Julie, when you come into some sudden money like this, whether it's through an inheritance or a lottery winning even, is sometimes what our experience has been, and maybe it's different with you, our experience has been sometimes people who haven't had a lot, they haven't had a significant investment portfolios over the years, aren't really used to the ups and downs that investments can do. And sometimes they become their own worst enemy and managing the money. Because the challenge is a 10% swing doesn't sound like much. It's only 10%. And if you have $1,000 invested, a 10% swing is $100. But if you have $1.2 million invested, a 10% uh-huh. a 10% swing is $120,000. Historically, the stock market declines about 14% once every year.
And what people have a tendency to do is if their portfolio is down by $120,000, they equate it in their minds to how long they would have had to work in order to earn those dollars.
Or they view it like as a permanent loss, like this decline is a permanent loss.
And the only thing that makes it a permanent loss is if you liquidate it on the downside. Otherwise, it is just a cost of investing, which is called market volatility. Now, in saying that, if you had a pretty good experience investing over the last 20 to 30 years, it won't bother you as much. If you've had little investment experience, it would bother you a considerable amount. So in a portfolio like this, I don't know quite what the answer is, but I would probably venture to guess that the portfolio should probably be 50% stocks and 50% bonds and cash. And I'd start from scratch and I would sell everything in there and I would buy the most tax efficient portfolio I could possibly buy.
And I think, Julie, I think we'd recommend go talk to two or three independent fee-based advisors and have them and have them. They'll all offer free consultation. Talk to them. See what the process is like as they talk to you and what kind of recommendations they would make.
And
the ones that come up with it, that start talking about the investments right off the bat, you should, here's, I've got this great thing here. Here's this phenomenal fund. Don't walk away from those guys. Run away.
And if you find an advisor that doesn't recommend paying off the house, don't use them.
Or doesn't even bring it up.
Yeah, don't use them. Because... you know, there's a conflict. Every advisor has a conflict with their client, which is the more the money the client invests with the advisor, the more money they make.
Right.
But what I think is important is someone who's a good advisor is going to try to understand what it is that Julie wants with these dollars. Mm-hmm. And you may or may not quite know yet either.
Right. I have ideas, but I do want some of it to be income producing.
Easy enough.
But I think it's come back to how much additional income would you like personally for your family? Do you want some of these dollars to go to your kids or grandkids in the future?
Do you want them to go to a charity? What are you looking for?
And when you eventually pass away, so these are all the questions that we need answers for.
Mm-hmm.
Once we go through all that, then portfolio recommendations are appropriate.
Okay.
Right. So if you go talk to a couple of advisors in the Cincinnati area and the one that wants to help you with some financial planning to be able to figure out some answers to these questions, that's the advisor you're going to want to lean towards. And then you want to make sure that it's a fee-based advisor, one that's not compensated by selling you a product, but one that's compensation is more aligned with your success.
Okay. And so you recommend investing the cash also?
Oh, yeah, the whole thing.
Well, I mean, it's
all going to be cash. It's all going
to
be cash.
I mean, it needs to get invested somewhere, but without, I mean, really, the important thing is what, there's $1.2 million that you have today that you did not have.
What's the purpose?
What's the purpose? What good can Julie do with these dollars, either for herself or her family,
and you
her
might-
kids, her charities that she's concerned about?
So here's one of the things that you did not say how old you were. But how old are you, approximately?
64.
Okay, so 64. Here's what we do know is
relatively
this.
Relatively young.
Is that you're going to have required minimum distributions in 7 years, and you may want to actually use those dollars to go to a charity. You might want to take some appreciated stock and use those dollars to go to charity. Now, you said earlier that you had some charitable inclinations. You should build that into the financial plan as well.
Yep. And once you go through that process, there's no rush on this stuff.
Yeah, no hurry.
Yeah.
Right, there's no rush. It's not like, I mean, it's in as long as it's in an interest-bearing account, no rush on it. You want to make the right decision, and really that's going to come with the proper kind of planning and answering some of these questions, like what is the purpose of these dollars? Now, not what am I going to invest it in. What are the purpose of these dollars? What do we want to accomplish in the rest of our lives and when we pass on?
Yeah, because we don't know what we're going to need in the future, you know, if we'll need any medical expenses or anything like that. We don't have any now, but...
Well, you probably will in the future, right? If you look statistically.
Yeah, my parents were in their 90s when they passed away, so I figure I probably will be too.
Yep, you better plan till you live to 100.
Yeah.
And maybe earmark some of these dollars for future medical expenses.
Exactly.
One thing you say, you know what? How much might that cost? Let's take a chunk of these dollars. We're going to have a certain account. We don't care what the value is between now and the next 20 years. All we care about is that's future medical expenses when we're old and have some medical. So that's the kind of planning I think would be helpful for you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah. I wish you well, Julie.
And all right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And Pat, you just want to kind of circle back on the stepped up basis.
Yes.
So what happens when...
In most situations.
And the reason you said liquidate those stocks before you even knew what were in there...
Didn't matter. You could guess that they were highly concentrated.
Yeah, because the losers tend to go bankrupt or go way down in value, and the winners get a larger and larger piece of the portfolio.
Yes.
Just by its
very nature. People have a tendency not to want to sell anything because
it's good enough for dad.
Implications.
Yeah, correct. While oftentimes we'll recommend to people, it's even they don't have the perfect holdings, but we say, look, you got a tax consequences if you sell it now. Don't sell it if you got things structured right. When either you or your spouse passes away, we'll have a step-up basis. We can deal with it at that time.
Or we're going to gift these to charities if you have a charitable
Or quit information. Giving cash. We're going to give these shares
exactly.
instead.
Exactly. Right? So you were starting to explain what stepped-up in basis means.
So when someone passes away, whatever, for tax purposes, what we paid for them as far as with tax concern gets stepped up to whatever the current market value is. So let's say someone had Apple stock that they had paid $1,000. Why you get a smirk on your face?
Oh, I'm thinking to myself, this is crazy. This whole idea of getting now you could pass on almost $23 million without taxes.
And a stacked up basis.
And you get the stepped up in basis. This is awesome. And it really does benefit rich people.
Oh, the step-up basis is a...
Really, really benefits rich people.
And the reason that it wasn't... Donald Trump's a real estate guy. That's why it was not in the last real estate, last tax bill.
Yeah, that's why it was smirking.
Because they use this a lot. But the step-up basis, what it is, it gives you an opportunity when you inherit some assets to completely reposition the portfolio.
Start from
without
new.
Without tax consequences.
Start from new. And
so
people have a tendency to think, well, my dad or my mom had this portfolio and they were in love with it.
I remember a client was in before the financial, like a year and a half before the financial crisis, inherited some money from a parent. Three stocks, all banking stocks.
And wouldn't liquidate?
No. It's good enough for mom. No, I'm fine with these. Then the financial crisis hit.
Yeah.
The worst performers, he owned the worst performing stocks.
Yep.
Banking stocks. He could have been diversified amongst a bunch of different things.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Anyway.
You're a financial advisor, Scott, not a financial dictator. You can only tell them what you think they should do.
Thank you. Pat's kind of joking because I had someone tell me that 27 years ago. And I said, I don't think you're actually the best kind of client for our firm. So. Good luck to you there, sir. I'm just trying to help here. So whatever. Yeah. If you don't appreciate it, that's fine. Whatever.
That's
there's somebody else out there that'll be happy to work with us. All right. 1-833-99-WORTH is the number to be part of the program. If you'd like to join us, have a question for us. Numerically, it's 833-999-6784. We're in Wisconsin talking to Teresa.
Hello. We're not talking millions of dollars like your last caller. Where I have a son who's in the Marines. He's 20 years old. And I had heard about compound interest and talked him into starting to put away $2,000 a year, which he just completed his first year. So he only has about $2,500 in a savings account right now. But he also has $1,000 in another savings account plus some cash in his checking account. My question is he wants to buy a used car. He's going to be stationed down in San Diego for 3 more years, and Uber is costly, plus it's not always available for him, so he wanted to get a car. And the question is, does he use the money that he was going to be using for investing?
Yes.
Or does he take a loan?
He's probably going to need to do both.
Well, depending on what kind of used car he buys.
He's been sending me pictures, and he's being wise. He's looking like at between a $4,000 and a $10,000 vehicle.
My son spent $1,400 on a car that runs, actually, Pat, so they do exist.
Does he still own it?
Yes, and has not broken down on him either.
Yet. What kind of car was it, Scott?
It's a Honda Odyssey van. It's 22 years old with 4 million miles on it or something.
Was he going to a Grateful Dead concert in the theater?
Maybe
no.
Oh, we're talking about Scott's son.
I bought a Subaru for $1,200 3 years ago, and it's still running fine.
Here's the concept on this. As a young man, if he gets in the discipline of paying cash for automobiles and any other depreciating asset, whether it's automobiles, clothing, he needs a suit for a wedding, whatever. If he gets used to paying cash rather than borrowing,
great discipline.
It's a great financial discipline.
Secondary, if he were to borrow money on a car that cost $4,000, the interest rate would be extremely high due to the fact that what he is pledging for collateral is a car that costs $4,000.
Yes.
And people that buy $4,000 cars have a greater probability of not paying them off than people that buy $40,000 cars.
I mean, he could go and get a new Camaro.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? He could go and put...
But don't mention that to him. So he wants to pay cash.
I mean, that would not be good for him. He's got some of his servicemen are driving new Camaros or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I don't know what young men like. Camaros? Probably Camaros.
Yes, he wants to pay cash. And then what he wants to do, if you want to actually get in a discipline of saving, come out of his checkbook every month, $100, $1,500, have it go to a Roth.
$150
every month. Have it come right out of his checkbook, $150, and have it go to, write this down, a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And he wants to hold the Roth IRA at Vanguard, and he wants to buy the total market. That's what he wants to do. And he wants to do it on a monthly basis, so it comes out, so he develops the discipline of doing it over time. And Scott, do you have anything to add to that?
No, there's probably some minimum start with any of these fund companies. Some minimum might be $1,000 minimum.
Okay. Well, that's what he wants to do.
Okay. So take what he's been setting aside for investing now and his emergency fund and purchase a car with that.
Yes.
Or buy a $1,200 Subaru.
Yeah.
Like you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell him though.
Okay.
He's wasting money on a fancy car, $4,000. You can get one for $1,200. He's got to find to look good.
This kid's going to be single forever.
Well, I have requested the recording of this podcast.
I got to tell you, this is very responsible of him. It really is, mm-hmm. Teresa.
Yeah, it is.
Because what happens oftentimes, young people, credit's easy to come by now. He's in the service. There's companies that'll line up because they know that they're good credit. Look, he could be getting a new car, all kinds of stuff. And the next thing you know, he can have all kinds of debt that he's enslaved to.
Mm-hmm.
Enslaved to, because that's what it feels like. If every month, if you've got creditors calling you nonstop, it's not a good place to be. Yeah. And that a lot of young people get that, and a lot of the people never get out of that. They're still in that at 25, 30, 35, 40. Their income's now up. But yet they're still used to having this big lifestyle. Their cars just get bigger and fancier, and and we see them. They come in here at 60 years old, wondering if they can retire,
and we have to break the bad news. So,
yeah.
Your son is developing great discipline. So, $150 a month Roth IRA Vanguard total market, and then when he finishes his service at San Diego, if he wants to enjoy a less expensive standard of living, he should move back to Wisconsin.
Yes, agreed.
All right.
Live with mom.
Yeah. Actually, live with you. I appreciate the call.
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks, Teresa. Move back to Wisconsin.
Well, San Diego is phenomenally expensive to live. Well,
the weather's about the same, too. Wisconsin,
almost,
San Diego. It's almost the same.
It's almost identical.
Wouldn't really notice any difference. Flip-flops. No problem. Shorts and flip-flops. Yeah. But we had a business colleague years ago. Remember Pat down in San Diego? And whenever there's a meeting, he would always show up and...
Flip-flops.
Shorts and flip-flops. It wouldn't matter what the meeting was.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's how he lived in San Diego. Shorts and flip-flops.
Yeah. Charlie.
It's good if you can get it. There is a, and it looks like this is probably going to become into law. Normally, we don't talk about tax bills until they become law because
no one knows.
I mean, yeah, anytime there's a bill. But there is a bipartisan bill that passed the House Ways and Means Committee unanimously.
And who says there's division in Washington?
The Senate bill also had RESA, it was called, Retirement Enhancement and Savings Act, that passed. They're both very similar. And this is called the SECURE Act, Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement. What's coming out of this, though, and here's what we're talking about. This will push the required minimum distribution date up from 70 and a half to age 72.
So it will help a couple of people?
A little bit.
Little.
Not much.
Yes.
From 70 and a half to, gives you another 18 months before you
start the required minimum distributions. And so, which means that if you have enough money that you don't need the required minimum distributions to live on, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. And there's also a thing in here that says small businesses could all band together to have a multi-employer 401k plan.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah. And actually, next week, we've got a special guest next week. Special. We think he's special. Our director of retirement plan services at Allworth, where he's going to talk about some of the 401k things. But this would be helpful, particularly if you work for a small employer that says we can't.
Got 5 or 10 employees.
If you work for a company that says we can't afford it, we're a small company, this could certainly help. Maybe that's why they call it the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act.
Do you think they came up with the word secure first and then get
some
of the
they
words?
Had then some intern, unpaid intern, come up with that. That's how that works.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yes, exactly.
My son in high school was an unpaid intern for a congressman, mm-hmm. U.S. congressman back in Washington, and he'd answer phones from the constituents. And so he said, I said, anyone ever ask you how old you are? He said, yeah, a couple times. I said, what'd you respond? Ma'am, that's really not relevant to our conversation. I'm thinking, you think you're calling your congressman? He got some high school kids popping his pimples in between calls. I mean, it's hilarious. Anyway, politics is a strange business. We are out of time. We're here every week at the same time at the same station. And if you listen to us via the radio station, we appreciate that. If not, if you listen to us podcast, great as well. And if you don't listen to us podcast, we encourage you to come find us. Allworth Financial. Money matters. Love to have you as a podcast listener as well. So enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Allworth's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Allworth Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice. You should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.